Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, is made possible in part by the Department of State, Division of Historical Resources, and the State of Florida. It's also made possible by the Jesse Ball DuPont Fund and by the historic Rossiter House Museum and Gardens in O'Galley, celebrating pioneer history, the natural environment, and women's history. Available for weddings and events at rossiterhousemuseum.org. This is Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, online at myfloridahistory.org. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on the program, the annual Florida Lecture Series at Florida Southern College gets underway September 12th.
We actually use the series to persuade people here on campus and also in the community to create something special, and that is the Lawton Childs Center for Florida History.
We'll discuss the occupation of Pensacola in 1814.
In late October, Jackson moved to attack Pensacola, fully cognizant of the fact that he did not have approval for his action.
And we'll talk about genealogy with Alonzo Felder. All that ahead on Florida Frontiers. The Florida Lecture Series at Florida Southern College in Lakeland is admired by people throughout the state and envied by those who organize other lecture series about Florida history because of the great speakers presented. The Florida Lecture Series started in 1996 with a presentation by eminent Florida historian Cantor Brown. Other early speakers included former Florida governors Claude Kirk and Reuben Askew. The Florida Lecture Series is coordinated by James M. Denham, professor of history at Florida Southern College and director of the Lawton M. Childs, Jr. Center for Florida History.
We actually use the series to persuade people here on campus and also in the community to create something special, and that is the Lawton Childs Center for Florida History. And that became... That came into being about 2000, the year 2000. And so since that time, the lecture series has been an annual event that people have been looking forward to. And it's amazing because I just noticed the other day, of course, we do a solicitation for donations. That's how we actually run the program. And every year we send out a brochure with a solicitation, and we are still getting gifts from the same people around 30 years ago. So it's just been a great ride.
The 2024-2025 Florida Lecture Series at Florida Southern College begins on September 12th with Corey Malcolm's presentation, Slavery and the Sea, Exploring the Transatlantic Slave Trade in the Florida Keys. Dr. Malcolm does much of his research underwater.
He does. He actually met Dr. Malcolm about 5 years ago in my various trips down to Key West to do research, and he's now at the Key West Public Library, which is on the Monroe County Public Library, on Fleming Street in Key West, and they have expanded the center down there. It's now the Florida Keys Historic Center. But anyway, Corey began as a recent graduate back 30 years ago working with Mel Fisher. He actually was in some of the early underwater activities of Mel Fisher, and then he directed the Mel Fisher Museum for many, many years. But then about two years ago, he took this leadership of this new Center for the Study of the Florida Keys. So I'm really looking forward to hosting him. He's a terrific speaker, and he's got lots and lots of interesting experiences. And he's going to be actually talking about his discovery, or at least his part in the discovery of a slave ship called the Guerrero, which went down in the 1820s or 1830s.
On October 3rd, the Florida Lecture Series continues with Kevin Kokomor discussing his award-winning book, La Florida, Catholics, Conquistadors, and Other American Origin Stories.
as you say, award-winning, and it's really a well-written, well-thought-out book, and it's really great reading. And it really kind of really argues that the Spanish elements of America's founding have been essentially left out. We tend to think only of New England Puritans and even, of course, the Jamestown experience as really all there is in terms of the founding of America. But his book asserts that there's still a tremendous amount of Hispanic characteristics along with the founding. And even before Florida, for example, became American territory, Spanish influence was incredibly important.
On November 14th, Charlie Fanning will discuss Building an Empire of the Everglades, How Industrial Agriculture Transformed South Florida's River of Grass. James M. Denham.
Charlie is a young scholar, and I have to say I kind of take a lot of pride in his growth. He just received his PhD from University of Maryland, but he was one of my former students here at Florida Southern College. And his dissertation, which he's going to talk about in a public event and make it obviously very interesting for the general public, is about the Everglades transformation really since World War II into the economic powerhouse, agribusiness, and the production of sugar obviously is a major story there as well. So it's more of a modern look at the Everglades and its transformation.
The first presentation of the Florida Lecture Series in 2025 is on January 30th. It's Keith Honeycutt discussing The Storm, an antebellum tale of Key West.
Yes, well, I'm also very, very proud of Professor Honeycutt. He and I worked together for about 30 years as well on various projects. And again, the Brown Collection, or the Anderson Brown Collection, at West Point is a gift that keeps on giving. He and I did a book in 2004 and then in 2017 on siblings of the family. And this collection is composed of about 900 or more letters or artifacts and other artifacts. And among those is Dr. Honeycutt's discovery of a manuscript of a novel. Manuscript that was never published by one of the two sisters who are incredibly intelligent and incredibly skilled writers. Anyway, so Professor Honeycutt actually found the manuscript, worked with it, edited it, and did a fine book. And we think, or he thinks, that this is, if not the first, one of the first novels ever written by a woman in Florida. And it's about Key West. It's actually, the novel is set in Key West, where they lived in the 1830s, actually in the 1850s. And so it's certainly influenced by what they see every day and their surroundings. And it's a novel of an independent-minded young woman who is kind of thinking about her future and about her future life, and it really is poignant, and it gives us a great window into feminine perspectives or women's perspectives in the 1830s and 40s.
On February 20th, 2025, Leslie Kemp Poole will give a presentation for the Florida Lecture Series called Tracing Florida Journeys, Explorers, Travelers, and Landscapes, Then and Now.
Well, that book is a gem. It is just full of incredibly interesting stories of travel going all the way back to the 1500s, and then continuing into the 19th century and early 20th century. It's a book about various people and their travels, Audubon, DeSoto, all kinds of individuals. And I believe there's, if I'm not mistaken, there's some Marjorie Rawlings material in there too. But it's just a delightful read. And of course, Leslie has been with us numerous times already, and she's a real favorite over here. And this is probably her third for a visit over the last decade or so.
The final presenter for the 2024-2025 Florida Lecture Series is familiar to Florida Frontiers listeners. It's Rick Kilby discussing Florida's healing waters, Gilded Age mineral springs, seaside resorts, and health spas.
This is one of the most beautifully illustrated and beautifully done books that I've seen in the last 10 years. It is just, it's not only is it full of great information about long lost and forgotten tourism based around Florida waters, primarily springs and spas and so forth, but it's, again, lavishly illustrated, and it's obvious that Mr. Kilby's talents were really put to work here in his previous career, I think, as an illustrator and also as a designer. So it's just a fabulous book. Anybody that picks this book up is just going to be delighted with it. It's beautiful, and he's a great speaker. And I was really fortunate to have met him at our last Florida Historical Society meeting for the first time, actually.
The Florida Lecture Series at Florida Southern College in Lakeland is presented by the Lawton M. Childs Jr. Center for Florida History. The center has collected an extensive archive of oral histories that have been transcribed and are available online. In addition to their oral history program and maintaining other archival collections to assist students and researchers, the center has an active schedule of events.
Primarily oral history program, Florida Lecture Series, consulting with other Florida history societies, and, well, we teach a lot here as well. We're teaching students, and we're hosting people, not just for the Florida Lecture Series, but we also do special events throughout the year. If one comes available, we'll have a special program, that kind of thing.
James M. Denham is professor of history at Florida Southern College, director of the Lawton M. Childs Jr. Center for Florida History, and president of the Florida Historical Society. The 2024-2025 Florida Lecture Series gets underway on September 12th. More information is available at flsouthern.edu/flhistory or by calling 863-680-3001. This is Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society. I'm Ben Brotmarkle. Visit us anytime online at myfloridahistory.org, where you can find great books on Florida history and culture, listen to archived editions of this program, watch our public television series, Florida Frontiers, find out about upcoming events, and much more. That's myfloridahistory.org. Joining us now is Connie Lester, Associate Professor of History at the University of Central Florida, Director of the Riches Digital Archiving Project, and Editor of the Florida Historical Quarterly. Connie, the War of 1812 is one of those conflicts that was important on multiple levels, but generally receives little attention in history survey texts or classroom lectures. When it is discussed, it's usually in relation to Andrew Jackson's victory at the Battle of New Orleans, which famously occurred after peace had been declared, a fact unknown to Jackson or the country.
Nathaniel Millett takes a different approach in his 2005 article, Britain's 1814, Occupation of Pensacola and America's Response. Focusing on the southern borderlands and the British commander's decisions to utilize the region's multicultural population and revolutionary spirit to advantage, he develops a complex interpretation of events in the waning months of the war that invites a reassessment of the implications for the American victory. In short, he argues that the efforts to create military allies between British forces and indigenous people and enslaved or maroon blacks transcended the need for fighting men and posited the idea of political equality. To be clear, the policies pursued by North American Squadron Commander Alexander Cochrane and Royal Marines Colonel Edward Nichols did not extend to the slave societies of the Upper South and Low Country, where such ideas would have met strong resistance at home in Britain, but were carried out in the borderlands, where power relations were more fluid, less secure.
Was this effort to recruit among enslaved and indigenous people based on pragmatism, or was there something more?
In times of war, enslavers were vulnerable to efforts that would encourage plantation revolt or support runaways. But enslaved people did not need encouragement. They understood the stakes and took the initiative, running away to the British standard across the South. As the chief architect of this policy and a slaveholder himself, Cochrane had a keen sense of the tensions that defined slave societies. According to Millett, he also respected the fighting abilities of former slaves, as he had successfully organized Caribbean slaves against the French a few years earlier. George Woodbine, a white trader from Jamaica, was the British military's man on the ground in West Florida, reporting to Cochrane on the progress of raising troops. In May, months before full recruitment efforts were expected to begin, he reported, quote, "a party of Negroes, upwards of 200 men who have run away from the States, are on their march to Prospect Bluff." When Nichols arrived in August to recruit and train, he carried assurances from Cochrane, which were to be passed along to those who joined the British Army, that, quote, "those who emigrate from America shall have lands given them in the British colonies on which to settle, and that if at any future period when there may be peace with America, they shall not be returned to their former masters," end quote. Moreover, Nichols' orders to the 1st Battalion of Royal Colonial Marines made clear the respect and concern they were to show to both indigenous and black recruits, reminding the men that the recruits have, quote, "had robberies and cruel murders committed on them by the Americans," he charged his troops with acting with valor and humanity, showing the most exact discipline so as to be an example with sobriety as your constant care, believing that one example of drunkenness may ruin this. Violent punishment would be ineffective in training black recruits, he believed. Quote, "remember they have been oppressed by cruel taskmasters, and under slavery, man's best faculties are kept dormant," he cautioned. Millett argues that Nichols was, quote, "playing to the triumphalist spirit of Britain as the guarantor of the universal liberties of the citizens of the world," end quote. The major difference was that Nichols called for protection of blacks' and Indians' liberties using the same rhetoric. He clearly viewed indigenous people in the classic noble savage role as the glorious sons of nature, as he put it, who were making honorable attempts to survive the constant threat of extermination by the United States. He similarly conceptualized blacks as potentially equal to whites. In sum, Nichols regarded Indians and blacks as more than potential allies or pawns. They were human beings who required aid in the defense of their liberties. His promise that black soldiers would be rewarded with the rights of British man embodied key Enlightenment ideals: rationality, liberty, individual rights, and property rights. In making this promise, Nichols situated slaves as heirs to the revolutionary and Enlightenment inheritance that their masters claimed. The British were presenting a physical challenge to slavery as well as an intellectual one.
This was a bold challenge to Americans as the arbiters of liberty, but the promise was made with only a few months left in the course of the war.
Indeed, and the British would not be able to make good on the promises. In mid-August, the Spanish governor of Pensacola, fearful of an attack by Andrew Jackson, invited Nichols and his troops to take command of Fort San Miguel, where they raised both the British and Spanish flags. Life under the British, however, was not what the Spanish expected, as Nichols assumed what Millett described as nearly complete dictatorial control, imposed a system of passports, and jailed anyone deemed suspicious. Nor were the Spanish pleased with black and indigenous troops. In September, Nichols attacked the Americans at Mobile, but the invasion ended in disaster for the British. In late October, Jackson moved to attack Pensacola, fully cognizant of the fact that he did not have approval for his action. His force of more than 4,000 whites and Indians quickly overran Pensacola, and the military forces and civilians evacuated the town. As Millett notes, quote, "The black population that Britain had recruited would form the foundation of Prospect Bluff's Maroon community, which ultimately provided one of the greatest examples of slave resistance in North American history."
A fascinating period of Florida history. Thanks, Connie.
You're welcome.
Connie Lester is professor of history at the University of Central Florida, director of the Riches Digital Archiving Project, and editor of the Florida Historical Quarterly. This is Florida Frontiers. For Alonzo Felder, finding out about his ancestors through genealogy became a journey of self-discovery. As Sebastian Garcia reports, Felder says that you can have a similar experience.
Alonzo Felder is the CEO and founder of My Roots Foundation, a not-for-profit organization focused on helping people find their family history through genealogy. He is also the author of Discovering A.S.J. Allen, A Story of Skinfolk, Kinfolk, and Village Folk, which earned the Harry T. and Harriet V. Moore Award during the Florida Historical Society Public History Forum in Lakeland. This award is given to an outstanding book relating to Florida's ethnic groups or dealing with a significant issue from a historical perspective. I spoke with Alonzo during that event in Lakeland about his panel presentation titled Discovering A.S.J. Allen, The Intersection of History and Genealogy. The genesis of Alonzo's quest to discover who A.S.J. Allen was started at the end of Allen's life.
That was my great-grandfather. He's the father of my grandmother, the woman who helped raise me. He was an African-American preacher, farmer, teacher in the Alachua County area of Florida. He was murdered in 1904. There was a dispute between him and his white next-door neighbor. My grandfather noticed that the fence was being built on his side of the boundary stone, and he confronted the neighbor with that information. The neighbor apparently went into the house, came back with a shotgun, and killed him. There was nothing legally to be said or done. It was ruled a justifiable homicide, which was pretty much the status quo for the time. What was very different was the community came together and they took the perpetrator to court. Now, 1904, Jim Crow South, nothing happened. But it's always astounded me that this community was so emboldened that in the middle of the Jim Crow South, a bunch of black people would say, hey, we're going to take this guy to court because this was wrong. And it just made me wonder, well, what kind of man was this that people would risk their lives for him? And that's really how my journey started.
For approximately 800 people, as Alonzo said during his panel presentation, in the South, during Jim Crow, to defend and honor a black man was not a mere footnote. Alonzo will discover the kind of man his great-grandfather was for such a remarkable event to happen. He was an admired, respected, and generous community leader, driven by his faith and the desire to see everyone in the community prosper.
He was well educated and worked with the Epworth League, which is a youth organization within the Methodist Church, and their sole purpose is for youth development. Their mission has always been a twofold. We want to educate the soul. We want to educate the body and the mind. So he was deeply involved with that. And I see records of him chairing various Epworth League commissions in order to advance education. I mentioned it in the talk. Grandpa seems to be very deliberate in the way that he wrote his messages, because he doesn't just talk about education for formerly enslaved people. He talks about having a heart for the poor black and white children who suffered so much after the Civil War. And I just find that intriguing, that at a time when it would have been easy to be racist, his theology wouldn't let him be. And he really enunciated that in all of his communications.
By discovering who his great-grandfather was, Alonso saw the complementary nature of history and genealogy, so much so that he included the subtitle, The Intersection of History and Genealogy, for his panel presentation.
I think you're missing out if you go down one road and not the other. History tells you what happened. It's the dates, the facts, the events, and that's important. But you will not maintain my attention, the average person's attention, if you don't include in there where I fit. That, to me, is where genealogy intersects history, is on a personal level. Genealogy tells you about the day-to-day lives of these people.
That intimate, personal connection gives Alonso purpose in doing family history research.
A lot of times you talk with people who do family history research, and one common trope that you hear is, I seek dead people. I don't get a buzz that much on the fact that they're dead. What gives me a buzz is that they lived. I want to know what made them get up in the morning, what motivated them. And that's what I strive after for genealogy.
Inspired by his genealogical journey, Alonso felt it was necessary to share his experiences and knowledge with others, and thus created his not-for-profit organization, My Roots Foundation.
What I find interesting is people find out the past and they go, oh man, I got people. I'm from people. And there's a sense of self-esteem that comes about. And we're living in a time where I can't go a day without hearing some news anchor or reading in a newspaper where someone says, yes, this person did horrible things and we suspect that there was mental health issues. Mental health issues and the prominence of wellness in our society. We're seeking it. We're looking for it. And I think so many of us pass over that. If we're looking for wellness, if we're looking for something that will help us to have better self-esteem, it starts with us recognizing we didn't just drop out of the sky. We got people, and we are standing on the shoulders of the people who came before us. I can't honor those people if I don't know them. So that's why I felt like I needed to start the foundation, to help people understand the importance of knowing who those people were.
For Florida Frontiers, I'm Sebastian Garcia, a graduate history student, FHS media production assistant, and history podcast producer at the University of Central Florida Department of History.
You've been listening to Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society. Please join us right here again next week and find us anytime at myfloridahistory.org and on Facebook. Production assistance for Florida Frontiers comes from Connie Lester and Sebastian Garcia. The program is edited by Giselle Concepcion. Have a great week. I'm Ben Brotmarkle. Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, is made possible in part by the Department of State Division of Historical Resources and the State of Florida. It's also made possible by the Jesse Ball DuPont Fund and by the historic Rossiter House Museum and Gardens in O'Galley, celebrating pioneer history, the natural environment, and women's history. Available for weddings and events at rossiterhousemuseum.org.